Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning, everyone. And in our last installment of Congress Goes Bonkers, we were talking to New York Times columnist Joe Nocera about a sneaky change in the parliamentary rules by House Speaker John Boehner. Usually, if the Senate passes a budget, any member of the House can call it up for a vote in that chamber. But Speaker Boehner quietly changed that rule for the government shutdown, allowing only he and his majority leader to have that power. Democrat Chris Van Hollen protested on the House floor in a video that's gone viral on YouTube. And then I asked Joe Nocera about the trick.
You are asking the wrong guy about that. My daughter, Kate, would know this inside out and backwards at BuzzFeed, but you're playing to my weakness.
Well,
we
put it out. Now, Joe Nocera was one honest guest. I always appreciate when someone says, I don't know, instead of bluffing their way through an answer and maybe misinforming people. And so we took him up on his suggestion, his referral, and called his daughter, Kate Nocera, congressional correspondent for BuzzFeed. Hi, Kate. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks for having me. How are you?
Okay. So who called you first yesterday, my producer to invite you on the show or your dad warning you that you might be getting our call and he mentioned you on the radio?
I actually saw it on Twitter first. My friend Darius actually tweeted it to me first. That just, you know, beware, your dad called you out so you might be getting a call. And then sure enough, I did.
I can imagine your dinner table conversations. Politics this, media that. How long before BuzzFeed has more readers than the Times? Is that what it's like?
We usually fight about, you know, Twitter, whether that's worthless or a good thing. And I tweet, he doesn't. New media, old media. It's just, it's a brawl all the time.
Oh, that's right. Your dad famously has no Twitter account, right?
None. Yep, that's right.
So if you can't say it in 700 words, it's not worth saying. All right.
Right.
So what is the story with House Rule 358?
Well, it's really a very wonky thing, but it's just like you said it. Usually, under normal circumstances, any member of the House can invoke the privilege to bring up a Senate budget when the Senate passes a budget. But on September 30th, literally, you know, hours before the shutdown began, there was a rules change, and the Rules Committee changed the rules so that only the House Speaker, the Majority Leader, or one of their designees, meaning they would have to pick someone, could say, you know, here we're going to bring up this bill. And the whole point of that was is that they were scared that, you know, someone would bring that bill to the floor, that bill would get enough votes and pass with a majority of Democrats. They said that they wanted to have more time to force the Senate into negotiations, which is why the rule was changed. But really, it was sort of a remarkable moment. Just it was really just how little control they felt like they had in that situation.
It was a Tea Party protection plan. He was afraid some Democrat or even some moderate Republican would call up the clean budget, the clean CR that didn't defund Obamacare.
That's right.
And it might pass and reopen the government. And I guess it was a self-protection plan, too, because then Boehner would be subject to, I guess, the wrath of the more conservative wing, and he might be ousted as Speaker.
Sure, that was certainly part of it. They really were, they really said that they wanted to make sure that the Senate would somehow be forced into a budget. But it became very clear very quickly that a lot of the moderate Republicans were totally over what Boehner and House conservatives were doing. There's a sense that they just want this to be behind them.
So when this was taking place, the video, we're going to play a clip from the video in a second, about 5 minutes of one of the members of the leadership of the Democrats in the House, Chris Van Hollen. That video has kind of gone viral because he had posters illustrating his point and the whole thing about how democracy has been suspended. Let's listen to 35 seconds of it.
I make my motion, Mr. Speaker.
Chair
I renew my motion that under the regular standing rules of the House, Clause 4, Rule 22, that the House take up the Senate amendments and open the government now.
Under Section 2 of House Resolution 368, that motion may be offered only by the majority leader or his designee.
Mr. Speaker, why were the rules rigged to keep the government shut down?
The gentleman will suspend.
Well, Mr. Speaker, House, I think
the chair will now entertain.
Democracy has been suspended.
The gentleman will suspend.
Chris Van Hollen railing at Republican Congressman Jason Chaffetz, who was acting as the speaker at the moment. And I guess my last question on this, before we go to this morning's developments, and there are developments, is my question is, the leadership can do this? They can just change the rule without a vote on who can call a bill up for a vote?
They can. They control the floor. They control what goes on and how the House functions. And it was Chris Van Hollen obviously knew what he was doing when he went to the House floor.
Yep.
He wanted to make a very big deal about this.
Right.
And he did. And it, like you said, it went viral. People have watched it and they kind of understand just what a bizarre thing it was to have happened.
And not that the Democrats are above doing the same thing if the shoe was on the other foot, but it just kind of amazed me that, you know, a group in the leadership can just change the House rules like that.
Yes, it's true. It's not totally unprecedented, but it's, you know, that is what happened.
Kate Nocera, congressional correspondent for BuzzFeed. So where are they now? The last thing I saw come across is that the House is that would again be the House Republican majority is going to put forth whatever comes out of the Senate as a compromise to end the government shutdown and make the debt ceiling deadline. Are you seeing details of a different House proposal?
Yeah, what happened this morning is that the House Republicans, in an effort not to get jammed by the Senate, want to move first. So they're going to move their own package today that would include the same dates as the Senate package, leaving the government open till the middle of January and the debt ceiling increased until mid-February, but it would also delay the medical device tax in Obamacare for 2 years. It would strip out something that Democratic senators had wanted, which was a delay of something called the reinsurance fee. It's a pretty wonky thing, but labor unions really hate it and say it's going to increase their premiums a ton. But they would, you know, leave that in place. And the other thing that would happen is something language from the Vitter Amendment, which is a proposal to have all staffers and members of Congress and people in the executive branch have to purchase insurance on the exchange, which they already do, but it would also take away any sort of federal subsidy for their health care. It would treat members of Congress differently. But in the House proposal, it would remove staff from that and would be strictly limited to just the executive branch and members of Congress.
Explain why members of Congress would get a subsidy toward their Obamacare health insurance policies. How much does a member of Congress make?
Around $174,000.
And so if they were buying policies as individuals on the Obamacare exchanges, they wouldn't be eligible for subsidies, right?
Right. That's right. Just as an individual. But the confusing part is the federal government like a big business? You know, I work for a company that pays a certain portion of my health insurance, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so it was just a decision on the part of the administration to treat the federal government like as a business, like an employer, that was going to continue to pay, as it is now, part of members and staffers who do not make that much money. They're on the same plan. And staffers, you know, a piece of their health insurance. So what the House members are proposing is that members of Congress would get that taken away from them. The staff would still be able to get it. And that's what they're going to send over to the Senate today. And so we'll see what happens. The ping pong will continue.
Indeed. So I guess to make a point, when they passed Obamacare, they forced members of Congress to go on the exchanges.
That's right.
Even though they're getting employer-based coverage, right? Because the exchanges are really, in the rest of the country, in the civilian world, the alternative to employer-based coverage. If you get employer-based coverage, then you don't need the insurance exchanges.
That's right.
What they did to make a political point, and you could tell me whether it was the Democrats who did this as a point of pride or the Republicans who did this as a point of pressure.
Actually the Republicans who introduced it. It was Senator Chuck Grassley from Iowa who introduced it, and he was sort of surprised that it passed. I think he did it to make a political point, and then it ended up in the bill. It's one of those tricky things that's been confusing for a lot of people, a huge amount of stress for staffers on Capitol Hill who don't make that much money. But essentially, what you're saying is if you're taking away their health care subsidy, for some people, it's, you know, a $10,000 to $15,000 pay decrease at the end of, if you suddenly have to start paying out of pocket for your entire health care plan, but your income is such that you don't qualify for a subsidy. So this House proposal is they're hoping that this will make it more palpable to the Senate.
So if I'm understanding you correctly, and they're removing the subsidies from the members of the House, they're basically saying if you're elected to Congress, you're no longer going to get employer-based health insurance. You're going to have to go on to the Obama exchanges. And you're not going to get any subsidy from the federal government as your employer toward the premiums? Is that what they're saying?
That is what they're saying. And they're saying they want to do this to themselves and also to the president and the president's cabinet as well.
Can that pass the Senate?
I think that is a more – yes. I think it could pass the Senate. But I don't know that anything in this House package, if it goes to the Senate, if it will pass the Senate. There are no sort of Democratic concessions to Democrats in it other than, you know, reopening the government and passing a CR, which Democrats have always said shouldn't be a concession, but rather, part of their job.
when you say no other concessions to Democrats in the House bill, the big concession or the big point of dispute was supposed to be whether major provisions of Obamacare get delayed for a year tied to the CR. But that's not in there, is it? Just these little things?
Well, there would be a two-year delay of the medical device tax, which a lot of Democrats are actually opposed to. But in the Senate plan, the original Senate plan that was being floated around yesterday, there was a piece of Obamacare that Democrats really don't like that was going to get kind of removed and that Republicans do like. So there's nothing in this House package that would, you know, be considered a piece of how Democrats, you know, giving something to the Democrats in exchange for a two-year medical device tax. It's all very confusing, and it could probably change in about 10 minutes, Brian.
Right.
Honestly, that's where we are right now.
Right. So it's a pull back from the weeds of what's in the House plan and what's in the as-yet-unannounced Senate plan.
Right.
Do you see the basis here for an agreement before the debt ceiling expires on Thursday?
I do. I'm not entirely optimistic. It's still sort of TBD whether this plan could even pass in the House, let alone the Senate. Leadership clearly thinks it's reasonable enough that they might actually be able to pick up a lot of Democrats if some of their conservatives fall off. But, you know, the understanding I had from members who were leaving conference this morning was that people accepted it, were pretty positive about it. There was not sort of the same, you know, outrage that we saw in January with something called Plan B in the fiscal cliff, and they sort of forced Boehner to back off and then ended up getting a a worse deal in the end. And so I think that leadership was kind of reminding them of that, saying we have to come up with our own plan. We have to be for something. We can't just, you know, say no to everything that the Senate does.
But then this doesn't go far enough for the Tea Party wing, so he might have to violate their trust or risk violating the majority of the majority rule, the so-called Hastert rule, and maybe a minority of Republicans would vote for this compromise, plus the Democrats, and get it through that way?
The impression I got was that a majority of Republicans would vote for it, but they might need some Democrats to come on board.
So are they taking a step toward isolating the Tea Party wing?
I wouldn't say that just yet. I mean, there are guys in that conference that are never going to vote for anything that has a debt ceiling increase. They're just not, you know, and they won't, you know, I think at the end of the day, Boehner wants, he does not want to default. He knows that this would be a very bad thing. And so this is sort of the last ditch effort. They did sing Amazing Grace at the start of their conference, which, you know, to me.
Do they do that every day?
No, not at all. That was quite a detail.
So they're giving up on human judgment and praying for divine intervention?
I don't know.
To come up with a bill?
That way.
These people who you said would never vote for a debt ceiling increase under any circumstances. I mean, that's the real crazy wing, isn't it? Because even if they insist on spending cuts tied to a debt ceiling increase, they still have to increase the debt ceiling in order to pay the bills that Congress itself has already incurred through its past legislation, or we will default, right? Even if they get all the spending cuts they want, Medicare, Social Security, everything, they still have to raise the debt ceiling. So there are people who would, in Congress, actually not vote for a lifting of the debt ceiling under any circumstances?
Yes.
How many?
I'd say maybe 20.
That's
20 to 25.
Fairly. That's out of 435 members of the House. That's not that many, but it's still a kind of scary size, crazy wing.
It's definitely a significant group of people who feel that perhaps it will. I mean, there was a Republican member from Arkansas the other day who said it would maybe, in fact, be patriotic if we hit the debt ceiling, and because sometimes things have to get worse before they get better, which was, I'm paraphrasing what he said. But, you know, there is an attitude, and when you have constituents asking you to do one thing, and you go home and you find a lot of support back home, it's not like they're thinking about 2014 or 2016 and it's the in the district. If you're getting tons of praise for standing firm on all of this, it's hard to come back here and say, oh, you know what, this would actually be really bad.
Kate Nocera with us, congressional correspondent for BuzzFeed, as we follow the developments this morning in the government shutdown and debt ceiling standoff. You know, I was looking at stock and bond prices. This was one of the big fears for today when the bond markets in particular reopened after Columbus Day, that this unresolved debt ceiling deadline coming this Thursday could send U.S. Treasuries reeling worldwide, setting off massive disruption since they're supposed to be the safest investment in the world. So the markets opened here last hour and not much is happening. There are no headlines breaking about, oh, look what's happening to bond prices. The Dow is down about 60 points, which is neither here nor there. So it looks like Wall Street, at least, has still a lot of faith that they're crashing toward a solution.
Yes, and I think that you will see today. I mean, I think they'll have faith through the end of the day. If there's not something by the end of the day today, I can't envision a situation where everyone's going to feel super great about what's going on up here tomorrow. The other problem for the conferences is that there are a lot of people who also feel that maybe we have a little bit more time past Thursday until the U.S. government failed to make a payment on something like Social Security or Medicaid or something, that it will be a little while before the U.S. misses a payment. So we might have more time than actually, you know, past Thursday. And that is just some of the thinking of part of the caucus. That is certainly not the majority up here. But that is there's a section of the House Republican mm-hmm. Conference that thinks, you know, we're not going over a cliff on Thursday night.
You know what I wonder if governors, especially Republican governors, are making their voices heard on this. As your daddy's news organization puts it today, quote, officials in several states said a default would mean unprecedented but unknown consequences to federal programs that are administered by the states, like Medicaid and food stamps. They also said that a market collapse could undermine state pension plans, and higher interest rates from a default on federal bonds could make short-term borrowing more difficult and costly for states. So, Kate, most governors are Republican right now. Is there a chorus of Republican governors rising to counter the Tea Party caucus, which still doesn't want to agree to anything without tying it to gutting Obamacare?
Not that I've heard of yet. You know, not that they've been calling out. I mean, Governor Christie was actually here a few days ago, and he is certainly not one to, but he, you know, they think he's a squish. They don't think he's a real Republican. They think he's a Republican in name only. So the real conservative guys aren't going to listen to a guy like Christie right now. But I haven't heard that there's been a.
You just helped his reelection chances in New Jersey.
They're not taking what he says very, very seriously. But they did all go out to dinner last night with Ted Cruz. I read that this morning in roll call that a group of conservatives went out last night with Ted Cruz to try and plot a way forward with all of this. So
forward, backward, a way out. What are they plotting with Ted Cruz?
I mean, they listen to Cruz, and they want to hear from Cruz and want to hear what he thinks. And then there's a certain section of the conference that believes that Cruz is solely responsible for the shutdown right now, for pushing this sort of defund Obamacare movement without sort of a plan B. I think we'll know more what exactly they talked about, if it was a way forward. Later on today, I do know that some conservatives did tell Cruz, like, look, we need to figure something out, and we need to actually stand for something instead of just being kind of the hell no caucus. You know, we can't just keep saying no.
Here's a little more from the bond market coming in, which is kind of curious. It makes sense what I'm about to say, but it's a rare day. What we're getting from our business and economics editor, Charlie Herman, is that investors have been selling off short-term debt. They don't want to be holding bonds that the Treasury can't pay. A lot of firms are getting rid of them as the particular trend, short-term Treasuries. However, today there is some hope that a deal coming will revive the Treasury market, so they're not in an abandoning kind of mode. There's cause for hope for a deal, but there's some selling of short-term Treasuries, which is so unusual. I don't know if you follow the markets, but that is the safest, the very most conservative, the really zero interest kind of investment. Just park your money somewhere because you know it's going to be safe. Investment that you can make is a short-term Treasury as opposed to a medium or long-term Treasury.
I don't know. You'd have to talk to my dad about that.
Oh, we've come full circle. Uh-oh.
He's the guy that knows about Treasury and markets and stuff. I don't know anything about that.
We just can't have no Sarahs on every day, rotating and rotating.
You could just have us both on at the same time, and then that would solve a lot of problems, right?
All right. Well, we may have to take you up on that one of these days. Kate Nocera, congressional correspondent for BuzzFeed. Her dad, Joe Nocera, obviously chip off the old block, following in her footsteps. Thank you very much for joining us and clarifying what's happening today.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And still to come today on The Brian Lehrer Show, a candidate interview with Cory Booker in advance of tomorrow's special U.S. Senate election. 30 issues in 30 days, issue 17, Booker and Lonergan's vastly different approaches to creating jobs. How human evolution has left our bodies mismatched for today's lifestyles. A call in for people who think Mike Bloomberg has been a good mayor. What will you be listening for in tonight's Loaded de Blasio debate? And Liesl Schillinger, author of Word Birds. If you've always thought there ought to be a word for something, she'll help you make one up. So a lot more to come on The Brian Lehrer Show today when we continue in a minute.